What's up, guys? Welcome back to another episode of the Vacation Rental Revolution Podcast. I'm here with Sean Moore. We're back with our Whiskey Wednesday Hot Topics of the Week with my good friends Mike, Josh, and Jake behind the camera and all the equipment. So appreciate you joining us live. As always, on Wednesdays, we're going to go through a bunch of topics that are happening in the real world, how they apply to our short-term rental investing journey. We always have a lot of things that are happening right now. We got kind of a lot of topics. We may not hit them all. We got the jobs report that came out this week, just absolutely blew out expectations. We got the STR market entering a work the fundamentals year, something that we talk about quite a bit, but I want to make sure that we kind of show you some numbers behind that. Fed isn't going to be saving anybody. The Poly Market and Kalshi are all really anticipating rate hikes this year. We're going to talk a little bit about that. We've been talking a little bit more about that recently. The regulation way, we always try to keep you up to date on regulations. We've got some things coming in Austin and some of these major markets. DSCR loans, how they're faring with some of the things that are going on for us as investors. And so we will, that's a lot of stuff. Usually we cover three or four, dive in deep into it. So we're going to dive into it. I'm going to come to both Mike and Josh for most of those. But let's start off. Jake, how are we doing on our, I can't think of the word, our survey, for the podcast. Good. We getting more feedback in there. You guys, do we still have it posted? I don't want to make announcement if we don't have it posted. So we do have the survey up. If you guys want to hear us talk about certain things, send in questions. These live, if you are listening to it live, Jake is able to see your, you're able to chat with Jake and ask some questions, I believe. Is that correct, Jake? Yep. So if you do have some live questions, Jake will interrupt us and get those questions answered, especially if it pertains to some of the things we're talking about. So let's dive in. First and foremost, the jobs report absolutely blew past expectations. 172,000 jobs added in May, more than double the 85,000 expected. And so this was a big report. Unemployment's holding steady at about 4.3%. The leisure and the hospitality market actually led all jobs added with over 70,000, well above the 14,000 a month average. A lot of that was driven by the World Cup hiring, kind of the manufacturing, also on the backside added about 7,000 jobs. But World Cup, lots of things coming on, hospitality space, everything else. A strong jobs report is really good for the economy. It is not as good for rates. So some of us that are in, you know, it's kind of a dual-edged effect for short-term rental investors. On one hand, more people are working, more people are traveling, especially in the hospitality market. We're seeing that demand in those vacation rental markets and the hospitality space with all those seasonal, some of them are seasonal jobs, but this well surpassed the seasonal jobs. We also have the World Cup to be able to deal with. But on the backside of that, we're not giving the Fed a lot of reasons to lower rates. And so with a strong economy, with inflation going a little bit higher, especially with the energy sectors, with the gas prices and everything else going on, it is unlikely probably, and we'll tie this back to one of our, in the stories in a minute, but rates are probably not going to drop a lot this year. And so this is a little bit of a double-edged sword. I think I'm of the camp that I'd like to see a stronger economy versus lower rates. I think that is, you know, a strong economy is good all the way around. And so I think that's a strong labor market equals better travel demand. People have a little bit more money. They're working a little bit harder. Now, I have heard of some people say, well, a lot of those jobs are because things are more expensive. People are having to get back to work. People are having to make sure that we're paying the bills. And so that strong jobs market that jobs report is maybe due to a little bit of a struggling economy. People saying, hey, man, I might need to get a second job. I might need to work a little bit harder at my first job. I don't know. But I think it's a kind of a double-edged sword. I think you can look at it. I think more than one thing can be right at the same time. But overall, looks really strong for the ultimately in the travel space. Jake, do you hear that feedback? Where's that coming from? It's a bug, huh? Mike, you got some feedback coming on your mic. If that's the case, just mute it. So Josh, I'm going to go to you first on this. What any takeaways on the job market labor reports that you're seeing coming out, especially in the hospitality space?
Around the rate side, you know, I think we got spoiled for a little bit. You know, COVID wasn't too long ago. I know when we bought our primary and where we are, we have some golden handcuffs right now. right? Like we need to move and we don't want to because that 2.9 rate is pretty awesome, right? But the reality is I think in the short-term rental space, you know, you talked about it so many times. There's so much shadow demand waiting for this magical rate cut that's going to just magically happen. We're all waiting for this to happen. How many years are you going to wait for that to happen? And when that does happen, the prices aren't going to stay the same. They're going to go up. Right? And when you look back, let's say it drops in 2 years from now, where could you be in 2 years if you moved today? Right? We're marrying the property. We're dating the rate. I think if that's what's holding you back, you know what I mean? Take a better look at the underwriting, see what that type of line item expense looks like and move forward from there if it makes sense in your situation.
Yeah. And I'm going to, that goes, and we'll just get back to the topic of the rates. Rates are probably going to, I mean, it's going to be hard to make an argument to drop rates right now. I mean, I think the easiest thing is to keep them where they're at. I am and would love to see better rates for, like we talked about last week, small businesses, everything else. It's probably unlikely to happen, which means all of those people that are sitting on the sidelines with, you know, short-term rental investors, real estate investors, waiting for those rates to drop, they're losing out on appreciation, the cash flow, the rising, they're getting hit double with rising purchase prices. Houses are going up in value right now. They're still going up in value. And so if you miss out on buying today at today's prices, you miss out on the cash flow along the way, the tax advantages along the way, the appreciation that you're going to gain, and then you ultimately get hit with that appreciation because you have to pay somebody else that appreciation. So your basis is a lot higher on these properties. And just run the numbers, you guys. Like if there was a 5 in front of interest rates, even if it was like a 5.875 or right under 6, it's not a massive savings monthly on what you're actually savings, but you're going to see a lot of people just mentally with a 5 in front of those rates jump into the market. Well, that couple hundred bucks that they could have saved every single month on that property in the short-term rental space, that's kind of negligible, right? I get it if it's a long-term rental and you're only making $100 a month per door, a positive cash flow on your rental. But if in short-term rentals, we're not dealing with that small of margins. And so you're giving up all of those other benefits that you could have been getting into the game right now on. And all of those wait and see folks, you know, they just become they're just waiting for that 5% number by sitting on the sidelines. We are seeing a massive amount of money sitting on the sidelines. We talked about that in the past, but also you're putting yourself in a position where you're stepping over dollars to pick up dimes, in my opinion, when it comes to rates. If the property can support it, if the property can still cash flow, if you're buying quality assets in quality areas that somebody else is paying for, you're ultimately have massive tax savings that you can combine. Who cares what the rate is, right? And so it's such an amateur move to sit and focus on the rates and say, I'm not moving until the rates come down. You move if the deal works with the current environment of the rates. So does it affect your underwriting? 100%. But does it mean you shouldn't be in the game? No, it means if I'm in the, like if I have 3% rates, sure, I have a, you know, that allows me the ability to possibly cash flow marginal deals. Right now, I got to make sure I'm getting really quality deals, but the rates really don't matter if somebody else is paying for it, right? And so it's one of those things that is likely going to happen where we might even see a rate hike. And so those of you that are looking right now, you might be seeing, you know, short term, some of the lowest rates that we're going to have for a little while. Long term, you know, if, you know, we always just so you guys, you know, I'm sure I'm speaking to the choir, everybody that's listening probably already understands this, but I'll state the obvious of how they raise and lower rates. They look at the economy and inflation. If the economy is doing really well, it's really strong, inflation's going up, you know, more than we want to see it, they use rates to rate, they'll raise the rates to kind of cool the economy, right? And so when you have strong job reports and you have inflation that's going up, you know, more than we want to see it, they're going to say, hey, listen, I've got to cool the economy down. I'm going to raise the rates. And we only lower rates when the economy needs that boost, right? We need to boost the economy. We need to boost some of the movement of money. And so they'll lower the rates. And so you kind of have to decide what you want also. Like, would I rather have a strong economy and a little bit higher rates, or would I rather have a less than desirable economy and lower rates? And, you know, I'm of the, like, it's nice to have a good balance of both. And I think we have a pretty good balance right now of both and that we can be taken advantage of. Any, Mike, you have any adds to that? Josh, you want to add more to that?
Yeah. One thing is, you know, I know we're about to transition into this topic about the economy, right? If I save $100 a month, $150 a month, $200 a month on my mortgage, whatever that is, but the economy is weaker, that vacationer, that guest is going to be less likely to book, right? Like, and so we want a stronger economy. They're going to vacation more. They're going to book our place more. Yeah. For most of those places, when you look at the rate difference, it's literally less than a night of rental.
Yeah.
Right. And is that worth it to you? Say, hey, I'm going to wait and over one night of rental, you know, when I've got an inventory of 30 a month. And that just seems to be, if it's in the right place and that's the reason it's holding you back, maybe just look at it through a different lens and see if it fits for what you're trying to do.
Yeah, totally agree. It makes it, I feel like it's that, and it has been for a long time. I've literally been talking about this off and on since 2022 when things just skyrocketed overnight. Right. And so, are we still live, Jake? What am I looking at here? Okay. All right. Sorry. I saw my screen changed and I saw you guys talking and I didn't hear any words coming out of your mouth. So, but yeah, it is something that inexperienced investors will focus a lot on. Now you hear about it a lot on, you know, you have to realize that every asset class within real estate is not equal, right? And so when you hear a lot of people talking about the how it works with commercial, multifamily, some of the bigger deals like that, and they're really focused on the valuation of the property is based on the cap rate of the property, right? They're valuing the property based on how much money it makes. So these rates sometimes can affect the value significantly. When you hear that, and you hear people talk about that, that's not the case with residential real estate as much. Residential real estate is driven by supply and demand, what the consumer is willing to pay. And in our space, even though we are investors, but we are still buying residential real estate, our properties are not valued by how much money they make. They're valued by what the consumer thinks that property is worth. And so it's different. And so these rates don't necessarily affect the value of our properties enough right now, unless it affects the consumer that they're saying demand has completely dropped. And that just hasn't been the case yet. The consumer's been very, very resilient. So let's move on to one of the things that's still about this. And then Mike, I'm going to get your take on this as well, is the middle class vacation is getting squeezed a little bit. We're starting to see, and we have been talking about this for a long time, that the premium markets, the premium properties are starting to outperform the value and budget destinations this summer. Like travelers, they're still booking, spending more per trip on average, dollars are going up. However, those trips in the middle and the bottom of the market are getting canceled and they're getting put on hold. You know, those it's very apparent where the consumer is starting to spend their money. And so for years, STR operators benefited from this broad demand across all income levels. Everybody was traveling. This was the shining star of the hospitality world. Everybody wanted to stay in short-term rentals. It was like having toilet paper during COVID. You were making money hand over fist. Well, that era is shifting. It's been shifting. We've been talking about it for a couple of years now. But what we're really seeing right now is that middle to the bottom of the market is really getting squeezed. Like people have talked about a K-shaped economy. What does that mean, right? The top side of the economy is going up. The bottom side of the economy is going down. And so consumers are looking for better amenities, better experiences, better locations, better design. They're not looking for the cheapest options, because the people who are looking for the cheapest options, they're saying, I might not go on vacation this year. I might need to wait. You know, I might need to maybe help the jobs report that we talked about earlier. Maybe they're working a second job. But this directly validates what we've been talking about at Vodacy for some time now. This is our Vodacy doctrine, is that the top of the markets are where the money's made and where we want to spend our time. And so we've entered that era where experience beats affordability all day, every day. We're starting to see it in the reports that are coming out, the numbers that are showing. And so the average is becoming really the riskiest place to be. We call it the messy middle. In our short-term rental businesses, we do not want to operate as a commodity in the middle or bottom side of these markets, because the middle side of the market is getting squeezed. Price competition, it becomes a race to the bottom. And ultimately, you are losing consumers who are booking those trips right now. And that seems to be where the loss is filtering out. Like the leakage is definitely in the middle and bottom side of the market. Obviously, luxury is not just a niche anymore. Premium markets outperform luxury markets, better experiences. Consumers are willing to spend more. The safest place to invest, you guys, is at the higher end of your market. It's better finishes, better design, better guest experience, ultimately. And how can we put together that experience? How can we articulate that experience to get the consumer to choose us above and beyond everybody else? Mike, I'm gonna run to you with this, because you are always who we lean on to kind of create these unique experiences. Oh, Mike, you're on mute. I've got you on mute. Hold on. Select your mic there, Mike. Josh, can you hear me still?
Yeah, I got you, brother.
Okay. Go ahead. I'm going to let you respond to that. Josh, Mike, let's figure out your, just interrupt us when you get your mic
working. Yeah. I mean, I know these will be in the show notes later, but yeah, we've got three articles that are focused on the different things, but they tell the same story. The host report, premium markets pull ahead, talking about your premium destinations are massively outpacing occupancy from where they were last year, while some of the more legacy and more affordable destinations, your Smokies, your Myrtle Beaches, some of that, they're seeing lower occupancy. I want to touch on that. Deloitte 2026 travel trends, VRMA summer STR pacing update. What they're all saying is this: we're not saying the most expensive properties. Yeah. What we're saying is the top property out of that comp set is winning hands down, and everybody else is getting squeezed out, right? And so you're saying, hey, if I'm in a market where I'm operating and I've been doing the same thing and I've had no changes, no updates, I've not advanced, I've not matured, whatever that is, and you're seeing your occupancy lower, but then you're seeing your neighbor who maybe does a little bit more, put a little more boots on the ground, a little more effort into it, and they're starting to pull further and further ahead because they're winning those bookings time and time again, right? And then the consumer saying, hey, I'm willing to spend more money for this experience. And that property or properties that can offer that better experience is getting the booking 100 times out of 100. And those that don't offer that unique and immersive guest experience, which is Mike's forte, what we preach from the mountaintops here of Odyssey. I mean, look at Mike's background. That's awesome, right? Yeah. Like, you're not going to find that at a budget place.
We could see you, Mike. We just can't hear you.
So you know, we're going to see those type of, but that type of thing converts to the consumer, right? And the consumer is saying, hey, if I'm going to spend my dollars, I'm going to spend, you mentioned about the K-shaped economy, I'm going to spend my dollars here. That's where I want to go. I'm no longer looking for this.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's, it's been what we've been talking about for a long, long, long time. I mean, this is where we chose to operate with Vodacy, with our signature properties, with our group. Our goal is always to be in the top 1% of every market. That's what we shoot for. We want to be the top properties in whatever market we're in. To your point, Josh, it is the top property in our category and in our competitive environment, right? It doesn't mean I'm buying the most expensive property in the market. Doesn't mean, like, we have some of those properties that are the number one revenue market in the entire market, right? That happens, right? Especially when they're buying the bigger and better properties. But you can be the number one one-bedroom. You can be the number one two-bedroom and on those properties. And it all comes down to the exact same thing. We've been doing it for a long time. We've been doubling down on this for a long time. It has become literally one of our fundamentals of what we're really trying to do, right? Our fundamentals are buy the right property in the right area. I need quality assets, quality areas. Second fundamental, I need to create a unique experience for a target audience that's better than what everybody else has, right? And then ultimately, I have to deliver that experience. Has to do with delivering it with the management. And then third fundamental is, how do I articulate it? How do I stand out in these crowded marketplaces? We're seeing that the short-term rental market, we're seeing that, massive amounts of supply in these markets. The consumer not slowing down on spending money. However, the first time we started to see right now, we're starting to see kind of kinks in that, the cracks in where the consumer is starting to spend. We've been saying it and anticipating it for a long time. We're now actually seeing that the middle and the bottom side consumer is saying, we're going to slow down on spending. Maybe we might be spending, but what happens is the top side of the market is spending even more money, right? They're spending even more. So they're making up that gap. So overall demand looks really good. Overall dollars being spent looks really good, but it's definitely segmented where the consumer's starting to spend their money.
I mean, and so we're starting a business, plain and simple. right? Yeah. If I wake up one day and I say, you know what, I want to be a landscaper. I'm going to start a landscaping business, right? And there's landscapers that come around and they, it's the guy pushing the push mower through the neighborhood, knock on your door saying, hey, I'll do your front yard for $20, right? That's not a good business model, right? It may make ends meet for right now, but long-term you're not doing a lot with that business model, right? Because you don't know the business. You're just saying, hey, I like to cut grass is what I want to do. In the SCR space, so many people get into this because the thought of owning a vacation rental, the thought of the lifestyle asset, the thought of having the beach home, the mountain cabin, whatever it is, the thought sounds great, but it's not just if you build it, they will come. That doesn't work, yeah. Right? It worked during COVID. It doesn't work now.
Can right? you hear me now?
There we go. We got him. All right. Mike's back.
Mike's back. I have no idea how painful this is.
Yeah, so, I mean, we got the fundamentals. You dial those in, you build it brick by brick every single time. Like you always say, Sean, it's 1,000 golden BBs, not one silver bullet. We dial those fundamentals in, man, and we can be the top of these markets because the majority of our competition are pushing that push mower to the neighborhood, knocking on doors.
Yeah. And what everybody's trying to do is just, let's just go look backwards and see what everybody else was doing and what was working. And they're way behind the curve too, right? Supply is growing faster than demand. First time in many, many years. The post-COVID tailwind, it's over, right? 2026 is where the year of pricing discipline, guest experience, all of that's going to start to separate the winners from the losers. And that's what we talk about at Vodacy. It's the kind of market where the Vodacy system starts to prove itself. Supply, when supply was really tight, demand surged, everybody looked like a genius. Mediocre properties did well. Everybody was making money. That era has ended, officially ended. The 80 to 90% of owners that are operating with that mindset of I'm going to put a property out there. It's going to be nice. It's going to operate. They're finding that they're really feeling the pressure right now. This is a really tough game to play. And so it is now, even all the stats are showing it. This is now the time to double down and say, where and how am I going to play this game? And if you're not going to play at the top, my advice is don't play it at all. Mike, well, we can hear you now, brother.
This is the space where I can chime in, of course, as when we work with a lot of clients, they're constantly looking at the metrics of a market and they're looking at what has been the top performer there for years, leading into them choosing to invest there. As you pointed out, Josh, but even this background behind me, it's not uncommon to put a bar in a room. The room I'm sitting in has a shuffleboard table, a poker table, lounge seating, all kinds of stuff. Not uncommon to have a bar in there. But experientially, right, we take these pieces and we make them into artwork, put them on the bar, but still make the shelves fully functional for putting things on it. Where when I'm sitting in the room and I'm playing poker and I'm having fun with my friends, I'm not sitting with an empty bar because I can't provide alcohol. I'm immersed in an experience, and we're taking that immersion and putting it across all those spectrums. When a person is looking at a market and they're looking at the existing properties, they're going, man, nobody's doing that kind of stuff. I don't know, cutting up bottles of alcohol and putting them on a shelf, that seems cheesy. Is it cheesy? I don't know if people would really like that. Is it cheesy to put these things in a kid's room or in a primary bedroom or in a hallway? Is that too much? I don't know. Nobody in the market is doing that. They all look like this and this and this. And when you look at it, they all look like well-done model homes. They're just pretty model homes, but they don't provide experience. They don't provide immersion. They don't provide that vibe of I'm not ever leaving my vacation. I come away from the attraction I went to see. I come away from the beach, the lake, the theme park, the whatever, and I'm still in an attraction when I walk in the door and I feel like the vacation never ends. And I get asked all the time, man, it seems like the economy's hurting. How does this business keep booming? How does this keep going? And the answer simply is people still go on vacation. There are still plenty of people in this economy that make money. And I remind people, you only have to win 40 times a year, 40 clients booking your house as the first choice out of the messy middle, because your immersive experience and your opportunity to create atmosphere is so high that people will pay to come to you. Everybody might not be able to go on vacation. Like you said, some people might have to take a year off or 2 years off. but there are still plenty of people going. And now that everyone is caught up to this model home design where everything is quote unquote pretty, now it's time to go a step above. Pretty is now the middle. Model home is now the middle. Model home is now no longer memorable. So now what I always say is you need to have a memorable home, not a model home. And a memorable home has things like this going on in the background, but not just in one room. It's how do we do that in every room of the house, giving it a unique experience and an immersive story that someone never has to leave the vacation, even when they're sitting at home.
Yeah. And it's, and now we're, the numbers just don't lie at this stage in the game where the numbers, I mean, you can either, we can sit and talk about it like we do all the time, or do something about it as well, which we try to do all the time, is how are we going to ultimately, how are we going to ultimately double down on those things that we know the consumer wants? And that's exactly what we're trying to help you all listening, walk into this with your eyes wide open and say, here's how I can double down. Here's how I can do this. It's funny. I looked at, you know, we've been talking about designing for ROI. Like when we talk about design, you know, Mike is our lead designer and our, my business partner over at Vodacy Design. Really, I came in to them and we started, they've been Wynn Development for a long time, but as partners, we look at this together and we've been talking and we talk to our clients all the time. We say this all the time. We're designing for ROI. We're designing to get a return on that investment. We're designing to create those immersive experiences, much different than what we would do if we were designing our own home. And it doesn't look like a model home. And not the model homes aren't beautiful, but we designed for ROI. What was interesting, we started to do kind of a competitive analysis, see who's doing what, everybody, what everybody are doing. And I started looking and now everybody's starting to talk about designing for ROI, right? It sounds good though, but are you really doing it? Are they really creating? And so if you are in that game and you are thinking, how can I raise the bar? What can I do to raise my, you know, the average nightly rate? I had one of our Vodacy members, we had a coaching call yesterday and he came and he said, hey, I need to raise my nightly rate on this property that I've got. Awesome property. It's a one bedroom, one bath in Broken Bow. New build construction is about 3 years old, was crushing it right after COVID. He started losing market share and he's like kind of in the middle of the market now. And this is, it's beautiful. It's like a model home. It looks like it came right out of a model home magazine. And he's like, I want to do this and I want to do this. And I said, no, yeah, I mean, you're missing the boat. You've got to, there's a whole bunch of other one bedroom, one bathroom properties that look just like yours. When that's the case, the consumer says, hey, this is becoming a commodity. And not that it's not a nice home, it's awesome, but it was not designed for an ROI. It wasn't designed to create a unique experience. And so as he's kind of making some adjustments and trying to articulate well what he has, it starts with, we've got to design around what they want. Then let's worry about the marketing side. Everybody wants to buy these beautiful homes and then thinks that marketing is going to solve all the problems. We have to design for an ROI. And it, as many people that are talking about it, there's fewer and fewer, fewer people that are actually doing it because the consumer resists it. They say, hey, listen, I'm not really buying into this right now. And so what we try to do is try to show them the proof behind why we would do this. And we say, hey, listen, I get it. If you're buying a second home that you want somebody to supplement and you want them to pay some of the bills, not all the bills, maybe depending on the market, you can do whatever, like you do whatever you want. It's your home. It's your second home, right? Design it however you want. But if you're really trying to maximize it as an asset, as an investment, and you're really designing around ROI, we're probably going to suggest something different. And all of these articles that we're posting and talking about and these hot topics that come up, it's showing us and validating that the consumer, that's what they want. They want to be able to buy a unique experience. They want to be able to go, you know, not have a home away from home. They want to escape their home, right? They want to go somewhere different. They want to be immersed in the area that they're going into. And so all of those different things are very, very important, but it's also the consumer saying, hey, listen, this is where we're spending our money. So if you're an investor, don't try to go reinvent what the consumer wants. Go give them what they want. Like I tell people all the time, why would I go say, hey, well, this isn't even offered. This is unique. Okay, great. People like unique. They like different. But why are we going so far outside of what the consumer actually wants in this market as well? And so, you know, I think all of those things, you know, all of those things are stacking in our favor when we talk about the fundamentals. One of the fundamentals is I got to identify a target audience and I got to figure out how I'm going to create an immersive experience. And many times the easiest and best way to create an immersive experience is through the design of the home.
I 100% agree, obviously. But even more to that point, Sean, if you look at the comparables of a market that Vodacy Design has not touched yet, you're already looking at the past. It's kind of like deciding what computer to buy by looking at what computer sold best in 2024, 2025, and then deciding what computer you want to buy leading into 2027, right? By the time you've hit 2027, the computer that was made in 24 and 25 is obsolete in features relative to what the processing power is of the one that you've got now in your possession. The way that we look at design is in that same way. In fact, I have Vodacy members that we did properties for just a year ago. They're like, well, why didn't you come up with that a year ago? You know, and people ask me all the time, how many properties do you own? And I'm very transparent. We don't own any, okay? But there's a reason for that. And the reason is twofold. Number one, I feel like I would watch my property like a stock ticker, and it would be very hard to serve other people if I was constantly focused on myself. And there, that's just a psychological dynamic. But the second reason, and this is the more important reason, is we continue to evolve so much in how to meet what the customer wants in the way that they want it, in the commercial way. By the way, you mentioned home away from home. I've been saying that for years. So many people say, I really want this to be comfortable and relaxing. I agree. It's got to be relaxing, chill, comfortable. But nobody wants their home away from home, because if their home was that good, they would just stay at home, right? They want something different. They want something commercial. They want something elevated, something that feels like they went into something that is run by a professional operation that was custom designed for this experience. It has to be commercially thought out at this point to be at the top of the market. But if you're constantly looking at the home away from homes, which was very popular in leading up to COVID and right after COVID, where people went, you know, I'm going to go to Rooms to Go and take the set. And now it's just going to look clean. A lot of people think, like you said, the house is the answer. But right after the house, you know what the second thing people think is? The furniture is the answer. I'm just going to buy tons of nice furniture. But if you don't put all the stuff around it, it doesn't look right. So going back to the reason we don't own a bunch of homes, it's because we are constantly elevating the experience. That I don't want someone to go, well, show me your properties. And then I'm saying, well, caveat, asterisk, we did this one 3 years ago and we don't do anything like that anymore. And then we did this one a year ago and we've elevated that to this now. Like, I just don't want the asterisks, right? I'd rather just show, here's what we do, because it is, if you're really focused on providing what the customer wants, and you're constantly tweaking it as the customer evolves, you're always looking not at what did we do processing power-wise in 24 and 25. We're saying what is going to be bulletproof in 27 and 28 by theming the house by the attractions that are timeless and never change, decoring with core elements that are timeless and don't change so that it feels just the same. Like Ralph Lauren, it's still Ralph Lauren. It doesn't matter if you look, you can't circa what that vibe is. It's just a vibe. So there's a difference between, and most designers design to trends, fads, fashions, architectural digest, what's been working, or you design to timeless vibes that are feelings and emotions. That's what, I mean, think about Disney. It hasn't changed very much. Right? They add a new attraction, but they don't go back and really change the old ones. They just keep them clean, keep them fresh, keep them vibing, because you go to these different places for a vibe. So if you're not designing for the vibe, you're missing the mark.
Well, and it's got to be. And so some, I want to just put a pin in this, but I also want to go back a little bit, like to your point of saying, hey, listen, I'm not doing this because we continue to raise the bar. And I like, if you look at my property 2 years ago, it's not what I'm doing today. All that's true. We do continue to raise the bar. We do continue to figure out different unfair advantages. How are we going to implement this? But On the flip side of that coin, I have a property that you designed for me, and we did. We skyrocketed the number one property back in 2022. It's still a top property in that market, right? And so, when you have kind of a timeless, immersive experience where you're bringing the area to life, sometimes we change how we bring the area to life and the ways that we do it. But that property is still very, like, it's still performing at a very, like, what I don't want people to think is, if you do this correctly, you've got a 5 to 7 year runway with it
for sure,
to get a return on it. You don't need to be up in the bar every single year, right? And so we're obviously always looking and staying ahead of the curve in the game and how we're creating those immersive experiences, but they're timeless type of experiences.
And let me clarify that. I'm speaking purely from what we're doing as a business perspective.
Right.
I like just constantly being able to show the last thing we did
right
to clients coming in. But yes, timeless wise, you're right. Your property, for example, in Cherry Log, it's still killing it, right? And we did that years ago, but we've evolved it so much. But because we did it timeless in that fashion style dynamic that is literally never going to go out of style, it's always going to perform at the top of the market. And we're always going to keep coming up with new ways to make it even better. Quite frankly, I do believe, though, that after that 4 or 5 year run, because we are taking on the burden of constantly staying at the front, if you feel like as a consumer, you flatlined or plateaued, we can come back in and go, hey, here's the elevated version, same furniture, same design, same elements that you have around the house, because those were timeless. Add a little bit of a different story, a little bit of a different experience around the timeless design that you have. And then you're right back at the top with the latest and greatest thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, awesome. Let's shift gears to regulations, the regulation wave. We always try to keep you guys up to date on any of the major market regulations, because a lot of the smaller markets and sometimes follow some of these major markets. Not always, but sometimes. Austin, starting July 1st, so Austin, Texas, July 1st, the city is going to request removal of unlicensed STRs from platforms. So they're going to go start scraping these platforms. Operators must display valid city certificate numbers on all listings. And so if they see you on Airbnb or Vrbo and you are unlicensed in the Austin area, you are going to be removed. And it doesn't talk about fines here. I'll put the source on this, austintexas.gov STR page. And so this is right out of their .gov page. And so I'm not seeing anything on fines, but if you are in Austin and you are operating as unlicensed, better get your license by July 1st and start displaying it on your listing. They're wanting it on the listing. Houston's got a couple ordinances coming around. No big deal, $1 million minimum total liability insurance. We should have that anyways, and you need to display that on the listing. This is a weird one in Europe. Those of you that have European properties, the new STR data regulation took effect May 20th. Platforms must share all of the data that they're collecting with the government. And so for those of you that don't like Big Brother watching over what you're doing, maybe don't buy over in Europe. And so guys, national trending, we talked about this a little bit, is a lot of the states are starting to layer in taxes. Or the states are layering in the taxes, but they're also putting in some preemptive laws and saying, hey, we're going to start to limit these local municipalities from banning short-term rentals, right? It's okay for the cities, municipalities to tighten on their licensing requirements, but we can't just, the states are coming in now and saying, you can't just have like flat out bans on short-term rentals because you don't like them in a lot of these areas. So not everywhere. Some of these states, we're watching that really closely, because the states for the most part have pretty much stayed out of STR rules and regulations. And as that pendulum has swung, you know, the Wild West era of short-term rentals ended and a lot of these major markets regulations started coming in. Some of them, the states felt like that these local municipalities were overreaching a little bit. They came in and said, hey, listen, recently we're starting to see this where they're saying, we're going to limit your ability to do that a little bit. So we're watching that close. Regulations, overall, you guys know that I'm a fan of regulations. I think it creates winners and losers. The losers, though, are those unlicensed, uninsured, like the operators running, you know, kind of the mom and pop operators or the slim margin budget operators. They don't have the insurance. They don't have the licenses. The winners are the people who are doing it professionally. They're treating it as a business. They're compliant. They follow the rules. They follow the regulations. They know where they can and can't operate. And so they're that ultimately regulations can reduce some of the competition. And I don't mind it because we operate on the professional host side. And I'm not, we always go into markets where we can get licensing, we can get permits. And so those regulations, they create a little bit of a moat, and at least they level the playing field of compliant operators, if you will. And so when I hear some of these markets that are saying, hey, listen, these rules are in effect, you're following the rules, Sean, but somebody else isn't following the rules, but we're not doing anything about it. I want them to, if I have rules in place, I want the rules enforced. And so I am a fan of that, because if you're licensed, if you're insured, if you're paying your taxes, all the regulations that are there that you're following can be good for your business, because what it does is puts a moat around you. At least you're competing with other professional operators. And so it's going to push those people out who are competing on being the cheapest price instead of the best. And they're the ones that typically have the worst guest experience, are the ones that usually are giving the short-term rental hosts a bad name, where they're, you know, and so it's, in my opinion, I like seeing these rules enforced. Josh, I know you have some thoughts on that stuff as well.
Yeah. I'll tie into just a personal thing from this Saturday, a couple days ago, right? I am the head of our HOA. We have 144 homes and about a mile loop. Right, we're across from Lake Murray. We're next to another major neighborhood we're just like a more upscale version, I guess. Right. Anyway, Saturday night, a property about 2 weeks prior transferred ownership. We know we have like a transfer fee and stuff that happens. Whatever. Saturday night, my wife wakes me up and she's like, "Do you hear that?" And we look at the window and there's a bunch of teenagers walking back and forth on the street, and we just. That's not normally what you see at 10, 11 o'clock at night in our neighborhood, whatever. Then you start hearing cars racing up and down the road. Multiple neighbors call the police, and that house tried to illegally, outside of the county, operate an Airbnb. And their very first stay was a high school party that had posted all over social media to park in this neighborhood. We'll come pick you up in these two trucks and we'll drive you back. They destroyed the property. I mean, like holes in the walls, windows busted, all this stuff. Anyway, so that owner now has like a magistrate hearing with the county coming up. Not that we did that. You broke county law. We don't allow that in our neighborhood. But in general, those rules and regulations stop that from happening.
Yeah.
Right. And they don't have to be horror stories overall. If the neighborhood doesn't allow it, the city has regulations, rules and regulations, the county has rules, you know, rules and regulations, follow them. Get the right insurance. You need to have commercial insurance. Your homeowner's insurance will not cover you if you're doing commercial activities on that property, more than likely, right? And is that worth your future? You know what I mean? To save a couple $100 a month. It is baffling to me that saying, hey, I feel that I'm special and I can operate outside of the rules because I want to. The rules aren't there to push you down. The rules are there to make sure that everyone has a fair play.
Yeah, I agree.
I put that in there from a design perspective. What we're seeing is back in the Wild West days, you could put furniture wherever you wanted. You could cover windows. You could do whatever. Now, what we're starting to see is as all of this rule regulation, especially on the insurance side, a lot more inspections, we're having inspectors come in and go, hey, that bed's got to be at 30 inches, can't be at 38 inches, because that's providing encumbrance to getting out of a window. This window only cranks open to 17 inches. It has to crank open to 20 inches in order to provide safe egress. You can't put a bed in here because there's only one door in and no window out. You know, there's all kinds of things where in the Wild West of design, you could just, hey, we're just going to finish out that basement and throw three bunk beds in there. But now that will never pass inspection. It will never be insured, and it's considered dangerous. So again, as you pointed out, Sean, sometimes people can look at these things as, oh man, it's just everything starting to get so legalistic. But at the same time, if you're doing it correctly, it puts you at an even more unfair advantage because you're weeding out the chaff and setting you up to succeed. But I will also say, you better make sure that you're working with a design firm that understands how to think about these things, or you're going to invest a lot of money and layouts and decor and get it all set up and then have someone walk in and absolutely say, you can't have that. You can't have that. This doesn't work and that doesn't happen. And you find yourself upside down.
Yeah, it's the regulation side is really, really important. Even on the acquisition side, we're working on an acquisition right now. One of our members is under contract on a property, and it was only permitted for, it was built and permitted their septic system for a 3-bedroom property where they're selling it as a 5-bedroom property. And so they did a 4th bedroom. They've got a loft. It's going to be sold as a 5-bedroom. Most people, you guys, walk into that. They buy the property. They start doing the design. They're like, I'm going to host 20 people. They go to get their short-term rental license. And the license says, the licensing team says, well, we need to see your septic permit. Oh, it's for three bedrooms. So we're going to give you 2 people per bedroom plus 2 people. So they just designed it, furnished it to host 14 people, and they can only host 8, right? And so ultimately, because they do the bunk room in the loft, they do the 2 bedrooms, 2 bedrooms, 2 bedrooms, right? This is how it was set up. It was like, that's how it was being sold, and it was sold furnished. And it was already a short-term rental. Again, the regulation, whatever, they weren't enforcing it. They maybe did or didn't have licensing. But for us as investors on the front end, we're like, hey, listen, we're not buying a 5-bedroom. We're literally buying a 3-bedroom if we don't upgrade the septic system, which is going to be about $60,000 to do so. Do we want to do that and turn it into a 5-bedroom? And so those regulations and those licensing requirements, I'll tell you what, that septic one sneaks up on people way more than they realize on the acquisition side. And that's a massive, massive mistake when you're acquiring a property. It doesn't matter how you design it. You could design it exactly how the rules and regulations are laid out. They go to pull your short-term rental license and they pull your septic permit and they say, oh, sorry, Sean, you can only have 8 people in here. You were planning on having 12 or 14. Now I'm in a massive disadvantage of what I'm going to do with this property, right? And I already bought it. Most people don't find this stuff out until after they buy it. Nope. It's one of the things why we look at that on the front end.
You know, one thing that's great about being a Bodicey member, right, is we say, hey, where are you looking at, right? Where are you trying to go? Okay, we don't just say go to Google and find an agent. We have hundreds of STR-specific agents, the best in their market, that knows they're supposed to look at that. And when we align you with one of our agents within Bodicey, and we're saying, hey, you know, here's Gulf Shores, Alabama. Here's Blue Ridge, Georgia. Here's Broken Bow, Oklahoma, wherever it is. We're giving you the best STR operator or manager in that market that knows to look for that, because your average consumer doesn't know to do that.
You don't think about it. You don't even think about, hey, this is on a septic system. Guess what? Septic systems are all different sizes, and they're permitted when they get their building permit. They're permitting or putting a septic system that is going to be permitted for how many bedrooms, bathrooms are in that property. And sometimes people make additions. Sometimes they underdo it. And then in the short-term rental game, they decide I need more heads and beds, and I'm going to turn the loft into this. I'm going to turn the other, you know, my other spare room into a bedroom. And before you know it, you're like, hey, listen, I've got a 5-bedroom instead of 3-bedroom. You need to find that stuff out on the front end. And you're exactly right, Josh, working with the right people and who know those questions to ask, right? To avoid those massive, massive mistakes. And again, we, you know, this is going off on the regulation side. If you take anything away, I know it's the end of the episode, but if you take anything away from this, if you're acquiring a property that has a septic system in it and it's not on a public sewer system, you need to go look and see how many people how many bedrooms that septic system is, bedroom, bathroom that is permitted for, and then cross-reference it to your licensing requirements, because those things catch people off guard a lot in this game. It's unfortunate they get catches people off guard as much as it does. So I mean, we will wrap it up. Oh, go ahead.
From the buyer side, ignore short-term rentals. That individual is essentially paying square footage for a 5-bedroom house.
Exactly.
Yeah. Right. But the reality is, if your purpose is to run as an STR, it's only licensed for this. And that's what it's going to be. Right. And it doesn't matter what that is these are two different worlds that just happen to interconnect. So you need to have that agent. You need to have the partners there to walk you through that. You can't be somewhere like Blue Ridge, Georgia, North Georgia Mountains, and then talk to somebody in Atlanta.
Yeah.
Right. And expect them to understand and know that market. You know what I mean? Like, mountain folk are different than city folk, right? And we need to understand the regulations. We need to understand like how that works. Like, oh, I can put a pool in there. Oh, your driveway is at a certain grade. We can't get a crane out there. We can't get an excavator there. You're not putting anything on the lot, right? It doesn't matter what they say there. Like, you need to understand that market. That's why you need those local partners.
Yeah. And rules, regulations, we have always been, I mean, I'm not a fan of just sweeping regulations and saying, hey, listen, we can't do anything, right? But rules and regulations are in place for a reason. We need to follow them. Let's make sure that we use them to our favor and ultimately use them to sometimes create a moat around our competition and limit the competition if we're able to get into some of these closed markets or some of these harder markets to get the licensing and permitting in. And so, ultimately, Austin, I'm a fan. I'm a fan if you've got those rules in place to go out on the platforms and say, hey, listen, the unlicensed operators are going to get removed. And so I am actually a fan of that. If one person's following the rules, make sure everybody follows the rules. I was just at our resort in Hawaii, and there's a whole bunch of locals that came one afternoon, and one person rented a place at the resort, and then they have 50 people showing up at the pool. And I called him up. I said, hey, listen, last year I had some guests coming in and I couldn't get a guest pass. Have the rules changed on the guest passes? And they say, nope, you only get a guest pass for the pools and the amenities for the people who are staying. Each property has X amount of occupants that you can get a guest pass for. And I said, okay, well, there's a group of 60 people that are all locals that just showed up and literally overtook the entire one of the pools. And they're like, well, you know, maybe they're staying, maybe they're not. I said, well, first, I'm okay if you have the rules in place. If I have to follow the rules, so does everybody else have to follow the rules. And so kind of that same thing. It's like if I'm in Austin and I'm licensed and I'm permitted, I want everybody else to have to do the same licensing and permitting I do. The same as when I go to the pool that I paid a lot of money to be at. If 60 people show up and it's overcrowded and I paid a lot of money so it was a little more exclusive and they weren't supposed to be there, I'm going to call up and say, hey, listen, enforce the rules. If the rules are there, enforce them. If they're not, then let me know. Like I'm okay if they're not going to be enforced. I just want to know there's basically no rules. And they, 20 minutes later, the pool cleared out and I got the resort experience that I was paying for. So, there we go. All right. I'm becoming that grumpy old man that's like, hey, I have to follow these rules. Why doesn't everybody else? Right. So, that kind of reminded me of that. So anyways, we'll wrap up for the day, you guys. I appreciate your input, your joining us live. You guys know that if you have those questions, send them in. We want to get them answered. If you have topics you want us to discuss, send them in. We're trying to, every Wednesday, you guys know, we're kind of scraping the internet, hot topics, news articles, things that apply to our short-term rental investing journey. Fridays, we have interviews with short-term rental investors. And so if you have somebody else who would like to be a part of either of those two conversations, share the show. Those things are very, very helpful for us. We don't run ads or sponsorships. So the only way it grows is if you guys share it. And the final, most important thing I ask you at the end of every episode, pick that one thing you can do today. Start building that life you don't want to take a vacation from. Cheers, my friends. Cheers, boys.
Thanks for joining us on this episode of the Vacation Rental Revolution podcast. Share this with other people you think need to hear about it. And don't forget to subscribe and leave us a review. Hey, Grace, is there a website?
Yes! For more amazing content and expert advice, visit Vodacy.com.
Thanks for listening, and we'll see you on the next episode.